the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, let's get it going. It is Monday, November 11th, and we are underway on this Remembrance Day 2024 with Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Another week begins on Flames Talk, and a couple of games ahead of us as well. The Flames will go back-to-back against Los Angeles Monday night and then into Vancouver on Tuesday night to finish off with three games in 4 days span. But we have some significant news to kick things off on this Monday. First of all, hello, Mr. Gilbertson. Welcome back to Flames Talk.
It is great to be back, buddy.
That significant news comes in the form of a season-ending injury for Anthony Mantha. Done for the year with an ACL injury. The injury he sustained 6 days ago, as we're talking right now, in that win in Montreal on what looked like such an innocuous play. He will now have surgery later this week, a timeline of usually 6+ months on just the ACL injury. Was talking to Mick a little earlier on this Monday, Megan Mickelson, the color voice of the Flames. She, while she was playing, and she came back from this, was able to make another Olympic Games, and her injury was ACL, MCL plus meniscus tears. So she had a complete obliteration of her knee. This, as she was telling me, the ACL, while not an easy thing to come back from, is maybe a little bit less of a super complicated road back, but still a lengthy road back at 6 to 9 months is kind of what we're talking about right now. This had felt ominous since mid last week. Just the lack of information coming out, and obviously it's injury news, so you know, once you kind of got the word that this was not going to be something that was short term, you kind of just wait until the player's comfortable with the news getting out and all that type of stuff, because you know it's injury stuff and it's significant injury stuff. So you kind of want to respect the way the team and the player goes about announcing it, and they announce it on Monday, and you just feel awful for the guy. He comes in on this show-me deal, comes in on a one-year contract, and, you know, gets off to a really nice start, has that really cool game in Vancouver, first player ever to start his Flames career with a Gordie Howe hat-trick, and, you know, less than a quarter into his first season as a member of the Flames, he'll have to have major reconstructive surgery on his knee. I first and foremost, you actually do feel awful and kind of sick to your stomach about the bad luck that Anthony Mantha has just run into. It's really, really rotten luck for him.
Yeah, you know, when you sort of look back to our conversation with him after he signed with the Flames and talking about that show-me contract, and I guess knowing what this season would mean for his future, right? We're talking about a guy who was on pace to score over 20 again. That was going to result in, whether it was here in Calgary or somewhere else, a fairly nice payday. And you know, we might be talking about Anthony Mantha, instead of a show-me contract, needing to take a show-me PTO next fall. Yep. And I know that's not top of mind, but I think it frames the conversation about how awful you feel for him. This is a significant blow. I know he was so excited about getting to play with Jonathan Huberdeau. I know he was excited about how he could potentially fit. I know that he'd, you know, quickly become a popular guy in the locker room. And certainly I appreciated my conversations with him. I think you did as well. And, you know, I don't want to jump way ahead of myself, but I think there's a pretty good chance that these 13 games we've seen so far wind up being the extent of Anthony Mantha's time in the Flames organization.
Yeah. And that's kind of the part that you're like, you feel really bad for the guy, because, you know, he was excited to come here. They brought him here for a reason. They brought him here to work with Jonathan Huberdeau, and he's essentially been stapled to Huberdeau his entire time. And, yeah, like I know there's been lots of controversy and lots of people wondering why Mantha's here and not another player and why Mantha's on this line or whatever. That stuff's immaterial at this point now. But for a guy like you put yourself in his scenario, try to put yourself in his shoes. He comes here, he signs a 1-year deal, trying to show that he can be a consistent impact player in the NHL over the course of an 82-game season. I even remember he spoke with us kind of, it must have been after game one, where he had the Gordie Howe hat trick because they had come back home and were getting set to take on Philadelphia, and I believe it was up at Winsport. But regardless, you know, he was asked something about, you know, what has he learned in kind of this up and down journey to his time with the Flames. He said he learned how difficult it is to come back from injuries. And I remember that stuck with me because, well, that's a really interesting answer. Wouldn't be the answer you'd expect from that question. And then, what, a month later or so, here he is dealing with another significant injury. So I imagine, you know, what's going through his head right now. He's like, here we go again, another injury that's derailing a season, and I had a really big opportunity here in Calgary. They brought me here for a reason. So more than anything else, it's like the human side of things is where you feel the worst. You know, regardless of what you think about Anthony as a hockey player, regardless of how you feel he's played as a member of the Flames, like, this guy did come here on a 1-year deal and now has no idea what the future holds.
Yeah.
Except that he's got a really long grind of a rehab after his surgery, which will take place on Thursday of this week.
Yeah, and one thing that's changed so much about the NHL today is, you know, the off-season spans 7 days, 10 days, 14 yeah. days, right? Like, these guys are barely off the ice, and then they're training towards next season. And I think, like, that's what I always think of it in scenarios like this. You're talking about a player who signed with the Flames on July 1, who was already certainly training up to that point, but then you're talking about several months of training to get ready for a season that, in his case, spanned less than a month. And, you know, that's hard to swallow. I know, and you alluded to it, I don't, you know, we don't have to pretend it's not happening. There's people who are going to look at this and say, another spot for a young guy, that's ultimately great news for the Flames. And perhaps it is, but you got to feel for Anthony Mantha, because this is just just awful news for the player, and, you know, the fact that for the next, whatever, 4 months on crutches, 6 months recover, whatever the timelines look like.
Yep.
You called it a grind of a recovery, and I think that's a perfect way to put it.
Yep. And I would imagine it's as much of a mental grind as it is a physical grind when you're coming back from something like this, especially after, you know, why he came here and the opportunity that he decided to come here for, all that type of stuff. It really does put everything up in the air for the guy. You really don't know what comes next for him. He's, what, 31 years old? So there's a lot of uncertainty now after this. And that's kind of what I just know how personally I deal with uncertainty and not knowing what the future looks like. And believe me, I don't deal with it very well. And, you know, everybody deals with things differently, but having a really uncertain future like that can wreak havoc with a mind and with your confidence and all that type of stuff. So I really do feel for the guy. And, you know, the Flames will be here helping support him the entire way through. He's still a part of the team, and he's still going to be taken care of by the team and all that type of stuff. But who knows, as you said, if his time with the Flames extends beyond the games that he's played this year. That's a very fair question. I think it's a question that would be rattling around his mind as well. And now we see where, after 13 games as a member of this team, where this thing goes from here.
And just, you know, as an added wrinkle to it, obviously an ACL injury, and, you know, I think what we assume, although it wasn't put this way in the news from the Flames, it's clearly a torn or partial tear of the ACL. And so I think the added wrinkle is that it happened in Montreal.
In front of his parents.
In front of his grandfather, yeah, who won 4 Stanley Cups with the Canadiens. Like, that was a game. And you talk to guys over the years who always sort of downplay, going home, but that was a game that really meant a lot to Anthony Mantha. And to think that toward the end of the first period on what looked like a relatively harmless collision along the boards, he suffered this significant knee injury. I think that part of it too just sort of adds another layer of, oh, really?
Yep. One, and this text comes in, says, that sucks for 39. He was huge for them in big games, Vancouver, Edmonton, et cetera. I mean, you think about some of the divisional games he showed up in, scores the big goal in Vancouver, has the big fight in Vancouver, Gordie Howe hat-trick, so on and so forth. That third game in Edmonton, thought he was one of the best players on the ice at Rogers Place, scores the game-winning goal to break a 1-1 tie in the third period with a nice forehand-to-backhand finish. Look, There's no doubt about it that the inconsistent rap that has followed Mantha throughout his career was on display at different times. He had been moved down to the fourth line. He'd been kind of moved around for a little while, but for the most part had played with Huberdeau. And at the very least, you know, they had that nice little 2-on-1 that, Mantha finished on the road. I forget where it was now. But he had that nice little 2-on-1 that he finished off.
Yeah.
Now I have to go back and look.
Would that have been their... I thought that was at home against Edmonton. No?
It was at home. That's right. It was the game where they broke the game open against New Jersey.
Yeah, it wasn't against Edmonton. Yeah. It was the game before against New Jersey,
where Huberdeau decided to go back and forth, and eventually Mantha scored that goal. Anyway, my point is that it's too bad for the guy, and I guess that does then beg the next question. Okay, what does this mean for the Flames? So they've played the last couple of games on the road without him. He did not play the game in Boston. He did not play the game in Buffalo. Flames lost in overtime and a shootout in those two games, respectively. So what now? What does this mean for Calgary the rest of the season? Well, I think the number one thing, and you kind of touched on it, I do think, especially the way that he's playing right now, this probably keeps Matt Coronato in your top nine for the rest of the season. And it's, you know, one of those things I always... And not because you ever know what's going to happen, but I always caution when things get really upset on the text line or things get really upset on Twitter about, you know, player X being on the fourth line or player Y being sent to the American League or, you know, there's no room for this guy. How could they not have room for this guy? My advice has always been, like, just wait. Stuff happens and inevitably opportunities open up. Trades, injuries, whatever the case may be. And so here's Matt Coronato. He was literally in the American League for 6 days after making the team out of camp and gets recalled. He's been very good since being recalled, has the 2-goal game, has 5 goals now on the season. And now with this, he's probably going to be on the NHL roster. If he continues playing the way that he has, he's probably going to be on the NHL roster the rest of the season, and he's probably going to be in a top nine role, or at least have the opportunity to be in a top nine role the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think it turns out to be sort of just a strange coincidence that the game in which Anthony Mantha suffers this significant knee injury, Matt Coronato has arguably his most statement game of his NHL career to date. And I know you and our good buddy Vix would have chopped this up a lot last week, but, you know, the last week I was co-hosting with you, we did a lot of talking about Matt Coronato, and the one thing I sort of repeated over and over is, if he, you know, what's been missing for him, yeah, he's played solid hockey at the NHL level, but what's been missing for him is now just saying, you guys can't send me back. I'm going to play so well that you can't even discuss it. I'm just off your list of options to go back to the AHL. And I think on that road trip, Matt Coronato took a massive step towards doing just that, right? The goals he scores in Montreal, the confidence he plays with in Boston, quite frankly, if not for a crafty little tug at the elbow from Elias Lindholm, he probably would have had the overtime winner two nights in a row, right? He's on that 2-on-1 with Michael Backlund, I believe it was, in Boston. He's staring down another OT winner, and Lindholm, credit to him, reaches in, gets just enough of his elbow to not get it called.
Corpusalo to make that stop.
But I just think what we saw from Matt Coronato on that 3-game road trip was the start of him doing exactly what Connor Zary did a year ago and saying,
agreed,
hey, sorry guys, you can't send me back. And Is there a potential that he struggles a little bit at some point this season and briefly ends up back on the fourth line? Maybe, but I think the way he's playing combined with a season-ending injury to Anthony Mantha, he is really solidifying his spot for the remainder of this season.
Yep. Yeah, I thought he was one of the only guys who was kind of going for the full 60 Saturday afternoon.
It's been
in
a problem,
Buffalo.
Hasn't it?
That has been, which we'll dive into with Wilsey on the roundtable a little bit later on here. But I thought he was engaged. I mean, he could have had two goals in that game against Buffalo. He scores the first goal to start the two-goal comeback. But remember, like I thought the shot on the odd man rush that he created. He started the odd man rush with a nice little poke check and then does the crafty little look off and then fires that thing and clanks the post. He had Lukanen beat, but just rocked it off the post, and then he scores a little bit later on that weird play where Kirkland was engaged and got the Flames on the board late in the second.
Right.
But I thought Coronado again was one of the only guys going the whole day against Buffalo. So I'm with you. I think that this is a massive opportunity for him. When one door closes, another one opens,
yeah.
Or whatever cliche you want to use. And so far, I think Matt, since coming up on this recall, has taken advantage of it, and now the door is wide open for him to walk through. So let's see what he does with it here.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And we were probably in a position where the next opportunity in the top nine was going to go back to Coronado. And now, suddenly, especially with Martin Pospisil struggling the way he is, we might be talking about another top nine opportunity soon. You know, I wondered, it turns out to be Adam Klapka who comes up, and he's not going to, I believe, play against the Kings tonight. But I wondered if we might even see a top nine type promotion today, whether that was Jacob Pelche or William Stromgren or somebody else.
Yep. Well, and we'll get to Pospisil in just a second. Let's hit the text line, though, at 960-960. Shub says, Huberto buried that 2-on-1 goal, if I recall correctly, but it was a nice play nonetheless. Cody's right. It was Huberto to Mantha, back to Huberto, and that was the goal, because I remember Huberto saying postgame I wasn't expecting him to fire it back to me. I put it on his stick because he's the shooter, and he passed it back to me. I remember that one now. This from Stewart says, was at the game in Montreal. Didn't think anything of it until I saw the tweet that he was out for the game. I had a bad feeling right from the get-go because, first of all, it was a very innocent, innocuous-looking kind of bump. Second of all, the news came out almost immediately that he wasn't coming back. And a lot of times, with this group anyway, and a lot of other teams, you know, usually there's a little bit of a delay, and I'm kind of used to injury announcements coming out right before the start of the third period. And they announced this right before the start of the second period, like 15, 20 minutes afterwards. So I thought that was a little ominous, and then not really hearing anything about what was happening, and then starting to get a little bit of a buzz that maybe this was going to be a little more serious than at first it might have looked, all that type of stuff. So it looked super, super innocuous at the time, but ends up being, and that those a lot of the times are the ones that are the most serious, aren't they? The ones that look the least serious at the time.
Yeah, you know, the I suppose benefit of watching on the broadcast when you and I are at home and the team's on the road is you sort of see the facial reaction right away. You know, something that I can at least speak for myself, I might miss from up in the press box. You can sort of see the way they're reacting. You can get, I suppose, some hints that they think it might be something serious. And right from the moment the collision happened, and then you watched him try and, I guess, work his way back toward the bench, you just had a bad feeling about that one, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. This says, it's only frustrating to watch Mantha because his ceiling's so high that an average game leaves you wanting more. Good luck on his recovery. Jimmy says, Matty Scoronato has 5 goals in 10 games. That's a 41-goal pace on an 82-game season. He stays. Yeah, I don't think that he's going anywhere as it stands right now. Jordan in Vancouver says, prayers for Anthony Mantha. ACLs are super rough. Wishing a speedy recovery. Unfortunately, I've seen some X posts about people just being mad they can't trade him and not even caring about the injury. Not sure how people jump straight to that when there's a player's season and potentially career at stake here, let alone a painful injury. I agree. I think sometimes the I even feel a little weird talking about, oh, what does this mean now for player X or player Y when Mantha's out? I even feel a little strange about that at times. It is the nature of the business. I understand that. These guys are all pros. They all understand that too. But we are talking about somebody's livelihood here. We are talking about somebody's physical health here. We are talking about somebody's future here. So I even feel like you feel a little strange talking the day. And I know he's known. I think they've known about this like basically since it happened that this is going to be serious. But you know, you're still talking about a guy's future, and now that future is completely up in the air.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think Anthony Mantha gets it. You know, I think everyone understands the sort of, okay, who's next mentality in professional sports that teammates have to have, even though they feel bad for their buddy, that, you know, fans understandably have, especially in an organization that's trying to build, you know, something bigger for the future. And so I think Anthony Mantha gets that. But, you know, when we talk about who an opportunity might open for, or what's this mean for Matt Coronado, or what could it mean for Jacob Pelche, you know, I hope nobody takes that as disrespectful to Anthony Mantha. And I hope if you didn't catch the, you know, first 10 minutes, I hope you'll go back and hear that part too, because, you know, this certainly isn't throwing Anthony Mantha's gear out the back door of the Saddle Dome and instantly moving on. You feel for a guy who is going to be, A, going through a long recovery from a very difficult injury, and two, or B, you know, dealing with wondering about what comes next. You know, contracts expiring and might not be a long-term fit here. So what's it look like? Is it a guaranteed contract? Is it a PTO? Who might have interest? How hard is it going to be to showcase himself without having played a stitch of hockey since early November? All those things that he's going to be going through, you certainly wish him the best, because, you know, seems to me in my limited dealings with him to be really nice guy. You know, I know he has a young family, and you just wish him the best moving forward.
It's Pat and Wes underway this hour on Flames Talk. I did want to touch briefly on Martin Pospisil. He's been a giant talking point here for the last couple of weeks, and once again gets sat down for a significant period of time Saturday in Buffalo. Didn't play the final 28 minutes, so back half of the second period, and did not see a single shift in the third period. As the Flames lose that game in a shootout, we've seen him benched a couple of times. We've seen him demoted. We've seen him moved around the lineup. What's going on with Martin Pospisil right now? I want to play this clip from Ryan Huska from Monday morning, first of all, because he was asked a couple of questions about, you know, Martin Pospisil and what comes next here.
Ryan, can you give us some insight on kind of what happens next in the coaching process? Like, Pospisil doesn't play for almost half the game on Saturday. It was Kuzmenko a few games before that. So, you know, they know that they're maybe in the doghouse a little bit in that scenario. How do you start kind of coaching them through that part? Like, what happens next?
Yeah, I don't know if I would use doghouse. I mean, they go right back out later on. So I think they understand, hey, if you're not going, or if you're not helping our team the way we expect you to, then somebody else probably is. So I think they're able to turn the page pretty quickly because they have an idea of how we do it. You know, it's probably the short answer for you.
What weren't you seeing from Pospisil in the last game?
I just didn't feel he was engaged enough in the game.
So that was head coach Ryan Huska Monday morning ahead of this game against the LA Kings. And Pospisil is going to play. He's right back in the lineup. We don't know what everything's going to look like. Don't know what the line combinations look like. Won't know that until Monday night's warm-up. But it has been a very frustrating season for Martin Pospisil in a year that, you know, he was really hoping, the Flames were really hoping there was going to be a big step forward. You know, they started him at center. That had some good results, that had some middling results, that had some not so good results. That had been kind of a roller coaster experiment. He gets moved back to the wing. Then he gets moved back to center. He's been benched a couple of times. He's taken some bad penalties. He's taken some frustrating penalties. And it just hasn't been the same guy we saw in last year's rookie campaign that was that where he was such an impact maker.
Yeah.
We were, you know, Willsey called him one of the most impactful rookies in the NHL. Tough to argue that. You know, maybe not in goals and points, but the way that he impacted things in other ways, absolutely. And we just haven't seen that side of him on anywhere near regular enough a basis this year.
Yeah, you know, you started this by saying they were hoping he would take a step forward, certainly accurate, and now they're hoping he'll take, I guess, a step back, and by that I mean they're hoping he'll take a step back to being the player he was last year. You know, forget the step forward for the time being. Let's get him back to what they hoped that the starting point,
the baseline was.
Yeah, because it hasn't been the same Martin Pospisil. It hasn't, I couldn't think of many times last season that you would have heard what Ryan Huska said, that you questioned his engagement in the game.
Yeah.
He was usually the most engaged or one of the more engaged players in the game. And so, you know, I'm curious now moving forward. I drove down to the rink this morning, quite honestly, wondering if we'd see him as a healthy scratch tonight. That was sort of even cemented when I saw that Adam Klapko was going to be called up, because I do think the most successful iteration so far of their fourth line has been Lomberg, Klapka, and one of Rooney or Kirkland in the middle. And so I wondered if they'd take Martin Pospisil out. And, you know, I know I just said that I thought the most successful iteration of their fourth line had been those guys I spelled out. You know, I remember us talking, and we had a round table, you, me, Vix, and Danny Austin, and I was, I suppose, making the point that I thought Martin Pospisil needed to spend some time on the fourth line, because I thought he needed to get back to that. My job out here is just to forecheck and crash and bang and, you know, really be a nuisance. And we saw that the next game. Certainly no thanks to me, but, you know.
No, I thought it was you.
We did see that to start the road trip, except that it lasted about 15 minutes, and then Anthony Mantha got hurt, and Martin Pospisil was off the fourth line again. And so, you know, I do wonder if they circle back to that somehow. You know, I do wonder if Martin Pospisil as a fourth liner kind of helps just reset the mentality that they need him to have. But I'll be honest, I'm at a bit of a loss, and I'm sure Ryan Huska is too, because this just isn't a player who you think about lacking engagement or lacking that sort of attachment he needs to have to a game. And yet I think you could probably say that on a bunch of nights this year.
Yep.
And I'm sure Ryan Huska's sort of racking his brain to figure out how he can get him back to that, because this team misses the Martin Pospisil of last season. Like, that's the type of player that they want and need. And quite frankly, they need a little bit more of it from Ryan Lomberg too. And so you got two feisty kind of spark plug guys, and especially with a team that's kind of struggling out of the gates, you need some spark from those guys.
Yep.
And you know, the sooner that the Calgary Flames can get some more of that from Martin Pospisil, the better. Because I do think we've sort of passed the point of, I'm sure he'll come out of it. Like, I do think this is a concern right now.
No, it's definitely a concern. And I wonder if the transition to center has gotten him up in his head. I wonder if the you got to take less penalties thing has gotten him up in his head. And you know, that can take a whole season at times to get you out of that head.
Yeah.
So
I still wonder if he's fully healthy, just because there's times where you're like, he's finishing that hit for sure. Oh, no, I guess he's not.
Yeah.
You know, that's led me to wonder, is he feeling the way he should? Now, we saw it in Boston, right? He gives Brad Marchand the cruise past bump.
Helps spark the comeback.
Goads him into a penalty, really. I called him in what I wrote that day the unofficial comeback starter, because that power play, finally, they cash one in, and it turns out to be a turning point in the game. Like, we know it's there. We just haven't seen it on near a consistent enough basis. In fact, I think it's fair to say that Martin Pospisil has more consistently been the other way
yep.
for for
Agreed.
This team. Yeah.
Read a few more texts for you at 960-960. Good afternoon, Pat and Wes. Happy Monday. And on this Remembrance Day, Anthony Mantha, feeling for him, injuries are not great, and especially for a player trying to stick with the team. It's gut-wrenching, sending good vibes and soon healing to Mantha. He's had a decent start so far within a handful of games. That comes from our buddy Anand. Ken says, any thought of putting Pospisil with Backlund and Coleman? That could always work for a player, no doubt about that, although you like having Coronado with him with those two right now, I think.
Yeah, and let me just jump in because it struck me something that Ryan Huska told us this morning. You know, when he was asked about putting Coronado there and, you know, putting different guys in that spot, he said the player has to earn the opportunity to play with those two. And, you know, I thought that was a really interesting way to look at it. You know, those are guys that can spark anybody, but he doesn't want that to be, hey, you're not playing very good, so go play with these guys. Like, he looks at it the opposite.
It's a reward, right?
The opposite way. I thought that was a really interesting piece of insight today.
Nick says, disappointed for Mantha, wishing him a good, speedy recovery, and have a feeling we have not seen the last of him. That comes from Nick. And Peter says, I was worried about Pospisil as soon as they started playing him at center. I remember Jonathan Davis talking about Byfield on the show, and he was saying the Kings were messing him up by shifting him back and forth from the wing to center. I think the Flames might be doing the same with Pospisil. 960-960 on the text line. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. Pat and Wes from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome at the here downtown. We're here at the Hot Stove Lounge, and everything is being produced back downtown at the Groundworks Downtown Studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for your daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome, and so is the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, who joins us to complete our daily Flames Roundtable. Wills, you just wanted to quickly jump in on that chat we were having to wrap up the first part of the hour on Martin Pospisil. You definitely had your eyes and ears perked up on that.
Yeah, it was a great conversation, and I thought I would just jump in because I did ask Ryan Huska about him when we had a chance as broadcasters to talk to the Flames head coach this morning. And one thing I've wondered about is if Martin Pospisil's overthinking it. That's what it looks like to me, because he's just not playing with the pace that we saw him play with for most of last season. I would say almost all of last season, and even at the start of this season when he transitioned from the wing to center. And I think there could be a couple of things in his head. I think it could be that move from the wing to center and then back to the wing and now back to center again. Mm-hmm. But Ryan Huska said he thinks the penalties are in his head. And who was sitting in the penalty box when Tage Thompson scored the 2-0 goal in Buffalo on Saturday? A different penalty for
what a weird
Pospisil.
One, right?
Yeah,
what a weird one.
A delay of game penalty for putting the puck over the glass and out of play in the defensive zone. But it's just been a start to the season for him where nothing seems to be going his way. And that's despite the fact that he got off to a good start this season. I mean, he had 5 points in the first three games playing at a new position, and he is pointless in 12 games since then. Goalless in 14 games since he scored in that season opener against the Canucks. So, you know, he's still doing some good things. He still leads the team in hits with 44, but he doesn't pop to me the way he did almost every single game last season, where you noticed his speed and you noticed his physicality. The points almost felt like a bonus because of all the other ways that he was impacting the game. So Flames need to get that guy back, because not only do they not have a lot of players like Martin Pospisil, there aren't a lot of guys like him in the league in this day and age, guys.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, and it does make me wonder if Ryan Huska feels like the penalties are in his head. And I know you're trying to win a game Saturday, and that's always the first priority of the coach, but you almost need to maybe loosen the leash a little bit. Like, if you think that he is too worried about taking penalties, and, you know, he's been in the box for an unlucky one, and now he's not playing for the rest of the game, I just imagine he's going to feel even that much more tight the next time.
Yep. I don't think it's necessarily about the number of penalties. I think it's more about the timing of the penalties.
Yeah, fair.
I mean, if he takes a 2-minute minor for hitting somebody too hard in the first period of a scoreless game, I don't think that's going to bother Ryan Husk all that much. But when he takes not one but two penalties, when the game is tied in the third period and that opposing power play leads to the game-winning goal, yeah, that one's going to bother the head coach. And for a coaching staff that I think has done a great job holding their players accountable this season, I hear what you're saying, Wes, because it does make sense. I mean, if he's thinking too much about, well, you know, should I do this because I don't want to take a penalty and make the head coach mad, I think that almost handcuffs him in a way. But, you know, if he keeps taking bad penalties that are costing the team, as a coaching staff, how do you let him off the hook for that?
Yep.
It's a fascinating debate because I think what we all agree on and what's even being reinforced as he struggles is how much he means to the team. Mm-hmm. And it's not just about the scoring stats, although you never want to hear a guy, I think you said 12 in a row now without a point. Like, you'd never want that from a guy at any position. But, you know, this team has a little different attitude and a little different swagger when he's not the same player.
I do wonder, like, what is the like, what is the balance that you strike with him? Like, letting him figure it out on his own, but also trying to get him to change and, like, coach it out of him. I honestly do not know the answer. But I'm like, is there a way that you can be okay with the growing pains? But, Wilsey, to your point, if he's hurting you in games, I don't know if you can.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like one of those things where it's like a hamster wheel or you're just kind of like continuing to go down that same road. Like, okay, if he's taking bad penalties, you have to hold him accountable. If the timing of the penalties are really bad, you have to hold him accountable. But by holding him accountable, is that getting him more up in his head and sending him more in the other direction? It's a real difficult spot to be in, I think, for both the player and the team.
It is. And a goal or a point would probably really help his cause right now. It would just probably take a weight off of his shoulder. And I can't remember if it was you or Aaron last week that made the comparison to Sam Bennett, but I think it's actually a really good comparison. I think Bennett's got a higher ceiling offensively than Pospisil, but Bennett took a lot of bad penalties early in his career.
He still does.
Yeah, but he's gotten a lot better at it, and I think he's picked better spots to take those penalties. But, you know, last season, I think opposing teams and opposing players were always looking over their shoulder going, we're 76. Is he coming to get me?
Sure.
Like, that's the mindset you want Flames opponents to have. I don't think they have that right now because he's just not skating like he was, and he's, despite leading the team in hits, not playing as physically as he was, especially getting in there on the forecheck.
Yep. You know, guys, I'm sitting here thinking about a conversation I had with one of the Flames last year, and it was, I don't even remember which Pospisil play it was, but it was one of the ones that he was in the crosshairs of the league. It might have been the one against the Jets, maybe on Josh Morrissey, that he didn't ultimately get any supplemental discipline for, but we were sort of all wondering what's coming here. And this is one of the guys in the leadership core for the Flames, and I just quietly asked him, wasn't recording or anything, I just said, you know, what do you guys do in a scenario like this? He's crossed the line a few times. What do you talk to him? Like, how do you handle that? And the response was, yeah, oh, well, you know, we definitely talk to him and we're trying to help him kind of sort his way through it. And, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking about that because, you know, we talk about Ryan Huska's role in this and certainly there is one, but I wonder what the conversations are like with Blake Coleman or what they're like with Michael Backlund. Like, these are guys who, you know, when you're on the bench and a guy hasn't had a shift for 28 minutes, you notice, right? When he's getting the grocery stick treatment at the middle of the bench, everyone knows what's happening. And I'd love to know whether it was on the plane ride home or, you know, this morning or maybe by text message on the off day yesterday. I'd love to know what those veterans are telling him as well, because they know the sort of impact he can have. Yep. And they're going to be very crucial to sort of coaching him through this as well.
Yeah, I'd really like to see him get back to that guy because he does make an impact when he's there, no doubt. And I think he will too. I just, you know, sometimes it takes a little while. Sometimes it, you know, maybe it's not this season. Maybe it's next season. Like, sometimes it can take that long. That's why we always talk, is it not the sophomore slump, but like a lot of guys deal with a tough second year because there's more adjusting and all that type of stuff. And I wonder how long it takes. I do. But I'm with you. I think it will happen.
And guys, you know what I would love to see tonight? So the Flames are struggling with their starts. And I think one of the ways you can set the tone early in a hockey game is by throwing a big body check. If I'm Martin Pospisil on my first shift, I'm not going to go so far out of my way to get a hit that I hurt my team by doing that. But if there's something there, I'm taking it. And I'm going to try to start the game for myself and for my team that way.
Yeah, and I just hope if that turns into a boarding or a charging call, but they think that he's in the right mentality.
Yeah.
That he's right back up there.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, let's go there. It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek West and Pat starts. That they have not been Calgary's strong suit. I think we can all agree on that.
That's hot.
Yeah, I know. That's what you get here. You get lukewarm takes, like a bathwater that's been sitting out for 65 minutes. That's what you get from me. The first period again, just take a look at this road trip. First period against Montreal, they survived, but they were on their heels for most of it. They survived the first period against Boston because Tyson Barrie scored 19 seconds after Hampus Lindholm scores, but they were on their heels. It was a really bad start. And then against Buffalo, they fall down 2-0 in a pretty lackluster first period. Didn't love the second either. Fact is, all three games, they get four of a possible 6 points on that road trip. In all three games, they had to erase third period deficits to do it, which is awesome. That they've got that resilience. We all love the resilience, and it's exciting, and it gets everybody fired up. It gets the guys fired up in the room, so on and so forth. But, gents, how concerning are these poor starts to games starting to become?
It's concerning because I know that what they've done in the first 15 games isn't sustainable. At least it probably isn't. I didn't think what they were doing back in 2014, 2015 was sustainable either, and they made the playoffs and won a series. But I just don't think that having 8 goals for and 17 goals against in the first period is something that long-term is going to lead you to continued success. I think it's great that this team has built belief. And I think that started probably in the preseason, but certainly in the first game of the regular season when down 4-1 following the first period on the road in Vancouver against the Canucks. They battled back and they won that game 6-5 in overtime. Say, we're not out of any game. And outside of two games, in my opinion, in Vegas and in Salt Lake City, they've been in every single game they've played so far this season. And they've had to battle back. Their three third-period come-from-behind wins are most in the NHL. And if you look at the goal differential in the third period, it is excellent. I'll see if I can make this out under this really terrible light in here. 22 goals for, 15 goals against. I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So they have to figure out a way to get off to better starts. For me, it's two things. What we just talked about, I think, is part of it. In their heads, they're like, if we fall behind by a goal or two, we've proven we can come back and we can win. And it's actually kind of fun when we do that. So I think that is probably in their subconscious. Consciously, they look like a team that's kind of, and I forget what head coach said it, they're sticking their toe in the water instead of diving in.
Sure.
They're waiting to see how their opponent's going to play it before responding. And sometimes they respond pretty quickly. Other times it takes them a period. Sometimes it takes them a period and a half or maybe even two periods like it did in Buffalo on Saturday. So I think that they have to go out there and they have to try to set the tone in hockey games. And they have to, even though they know that they can come from behind to win games, they have to start putting teams in a position to do that and to prove that they can do that. So they're in a good spot right now. They're a couple of games above 500. They've got a 3-game point streak. Playing pretty good hockey, but for them to take the next step, they've got to start stronger, and they've got to do it consistently. It doesn't always mean scoring the first goal, but they just can't kind of wade into the water. They got to start diving in there.
Well, and especially, I like the way you put it, kind of they're sort of letting the opposing team too often dictate the style of hockey that's going to be played that night. And, I think another thing we'd agree on, guys, is that there's one style of hockey that this team's going to win with. There's no waiting around to figure out, how are we playing tonight's game?
Yeah.
Like there's a pretty obvious recipe for success that this team needs to have. And, it is probably oversimplifying it to say, Martin Pospisil just needs to throw a big hit or Ryan Lomberg needs to throw a big hit. But, I wonder if you start to use almost more of an energy line in the first minute or two of a game. Typically we see that fourth line get rotated in last, and that's how every coach essentially does it. But
was it the Golden Knights that would do that every game, start their fourth line?
They did for a while.
Yeah.
Yep, that's right.
Just to try to set the tone.
Yeah. And I just wonder at some point, you know, the last time I personally remember the Flames starting their fourth line was a memorable night in Vancouver. And I don't think you'd necessarily see that that sort of same fireworks show again. But, you know, you've got guys like Lomberg and Pospisil and, you know, even a guy like Justin Kirkland who likes to use his speed and get some licks in. And, you know, I wonder if this continues to be a problem if you see that group sent out a little bit more to try to, because we keep hearing about it, like, at some point quit telling us you're gonna have a better start and
have a better start,
have a better start,
get off to a better start.
And so, you know, it becomes a little concerning when post game the sort of recurring message is we still have to get off to a better start though.
The reason that I would be the most concerned, you know, Wilsey, you talked about the sustainability or unsustainability of it. So the numbers just have gotten worse. I just went and re-ran them while we were talking. So they've played now with the road trip. The Flames have played a grand total of 917 minutes and 8 seconds this year. They are 31st overall in terms of time spent in the lead.
Wow.
Just 147 minutes and 55 seconds playing with the lead. So just over 16% of their season they've spent with the lead. However, they've spent the 10th most time trailing at just over 400 minutes or 43.7%.
Who happens to lead those prestigious rankings?
So, in terms of who is leading who spent the least time in the lead, that would be the Nashville Predators at 140. They're having a really rough year.
Are they ever?
And then the team that has trailed the most is Seattle. They have spent 456 minutes trailing so far this year. It's just numbers like that. When it's that high on both sides, you're like, okay, eventually a bunch of third period comeback tries are going to come up short. And I'm with you. I think it is great that they built belief on night one. I think it's great that that wasn't just a one-night thing. And I think it's great that that belief is – I think it's a real thing. I don't think it is irrelevant. I don't think it's fluky. I just think, yeah, it's real. These guys believe
it. For sure it is, yeah.
But – you want to flex that muscle a whole lot less going forward. That's kind of the main message for me. It's great that you – it's like your vanity muscles. Like, okay, does the bicep really do anything for most people? No, it looks good, but like, you know.
What's a bicep?
It's a vanity muscle.
He lost me. What's a muscle?
I've never heard of a vanity muscle before.
You know, you got your vanity gym muscles, then you've got like the muscles that actually do things. It's like,
keep in mind your
– I got strong vocal cords. Does that matter?
Wilsey and I sometimes – don't even take the cart, we walk.
That's very good when you do that.
That is true.
I don't do that. Are you kidding? That takes making a golf round go way too long. I just like flex it a little bit less and be put yourself in a situation where you need to do that less. That's the big thing for me.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, they're off to a pretty good start this season. And I know they were 5-0-1 and they've fallen off a little bit since then. But if you would have offered the Flames, maybe not publicly, but privately, and I would think most Flames fans who want this team to win this season, a 7-5-3 record in the first 15 games and third place in the Pacific Division, I think they would have taken that. But they've got to take another step. And for me, the one thing, well, there are two things they have to do. The first thing is they have to start better. And the second thing is they've got to figure out special teams. Their 5-on-5 game has been really good, guys. Their power play and penalty kill have not. Those are the two things that I think is holding this team back from really playing their best hockey.
For sure, but I think when you sort of start to diagnose it as well, you kind of end up back at the starts because you're, okay, well, what happens when you're down 2-0 after the first period? What are you putting more pressure on? You're putting more pressure on your special teams because now you have no margin for error on the penalty kill, and now every time you don't get a goal on the power play, you're sitting there going, well, we just squandered a massive opportunity to get ourselves back in this game. Mm-hmm. And the other thing you're doing is putting a ton of pressure on the guys who play the big minutes. And over 82 games, that's really going to start to take a toll. You know, if you're not down 2-0, maybe Rasmus Anderson doesn't play 27 minutes one night, right? If you're not down early in Buffalo, maybe Martin Pospisil's not sitting for the second half of the game and you're not almost rotating two centers for a big chunk of the third period. Like, it starts to add pressure on other facets, and I think that, because you're right, the special teams is costing this team, but, you know, if you're not constantly playing catch-up, you can take a bit of pressure off it.
Yep. Yeah, and when you're not playing the right way from the get-go, you tend to take more penalties, right? And then again, if your penalty kill's not having a lot of success, then right, you'll end up behind in the hockey game, and now you're chasing.
And you take more risks as well trying to generate offense, which can come back and bite you as well.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. They've done a lot of really good things 15 games into the season, but still some things to clean up, and I think that probably applies to most teams, not named the Jets right now.
He is Derek Wills. Oh. Yeah, just the 14 of 15. Ooh, he's Derek Wills.
Wagon.
He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll start to wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And as we continue along on this Monday from the Dome with Wes Gilbertson and it's Pat Steinberg, it's a Monday, which means it's time to check in with the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. Trent Cull joins us now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Since we last spoke to Coach Cull, Wranglers a 2-1 loss and 4-0 win versus Bakersfield, and then an 8-3 loss and a 4-0 win versus Henderson over the weekend. Wranglers now 11-3-0 to start the season. Trent joins us now. Mr. Cull, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good.
How do you like the last four games? How do you like the way this past week has gone for your group? How would you look back on it?
Well, you know what? Even the intro from week to week now, you know, I mean, before we only had one loss, and the intro was way sexier the last two times we talked. And now all of a sudden we lose twice in a week, you know what I mean? And we're losing our luster, you know what I mean?
I still gave you your 11-3 on the year.
No, but you know what? This is awesome. Like, that's the bar that we're setting, and I love it. And you know what? Obviously, the one night we didn't, you know, we didn't have a great game against San Diego, but we found a way to kind of hang in the game, and then we still had a pretty good chance right near the end of the game. It's a one-goal game. So, you know, these things are going to happen. And then, you know, we win the next night and have a pretty good win, play better, and then almost rewrite the same script the next night. We don't have a good start. Some bad goals go in. We find a way not to be very sharp, and we get blown out of the water, which I think is good because, you know what, I know that that's not normal to say, but sometimes when things are coming easy, that it's nice to have some adversity. It's nice to get put in your place, and it allows us all to kind of dig in a little deeper, and I thought we did that, and I thought we had a good, really good performance yesterday at 1 o'clock.
Well, but in both circumstances where, you know, you don't like necessarily the way things go, you don't like the effort put on the ice, you pick up those losses against Baco and then against Henderson, but you respond really well in the next two games. I guess, like, how important are those responses to, because you're not going to, over 72 games, you're not going to have it every single night, but the ability to respond and respond really well, what does that tell you about your group?
Yeah, and that's what we're doing, right? There's an expectation level of us every night, and you're not always going to be perfect. We know that, but it's also good to have that, to kind of get taken down a peg. You know what I mean? Like, we're not showing up and winning hockey games. The American League is too good, and the other thing is that if teams have started a little bit slow, like, they're working to get better, and that's one thing that we have to make sure that we're doing, and that's what we're always kind of pushing, and that's my job to keep pushing this group is to we have to get better all the time, right? So it's just, there's no point in staying the same because that's not going to be good enough in another week or another month or in a couple months, right? So, but I do appreciate, like, as you said, like, the response is good, and we know that we can be a pretty good team, and now it's our challenge to do that every game.
Trent, you just wrapped up an extended stretch here in Calgary, a really successful homestand for your group. And, you know, as we've talked about, you didn't get a lot of these opportunities, like extended stretches at home like this in your first year with the team. Just how beneficial was it to be here for a long stretch of time, games, practices, so on and so forth? How important were these last few weeks for your group?
It's been good. It's been good. Like you said, it's almost like we're not used to it, because we're not. You know, last year it wasn't like that at all. It seemed like we always had these travel times, and to have 8 games at home was nice. I think it's really good. We got a chance to get out. We started at home, got a chance to get out in the road. Now we come back home for a good long spell. So with guys with, you know, significant others or families, you know, kind of getting established, it was really good. And I think it's and it's nice for us to be competitive and have a good homestand. And so now I've liked everything about it. And I'm kind of just getting used to it a little bit myself. And we still now have 3 more practice days this coming week. I had a day off today, and then we'll take off and we'll travel and we'll go on a longer one over the next couple of weeks. So we look forward to getting on the road, but it's been a real good for our group to be at home this long.
We're chatting with Trent Cull. He's the head coach of the 11-3-0 Calgary Wranglers, joining us here on Flames Talk with Pat and Wes. Wes?
Trent, for the second time in, I think, just 4 weeks this season, the Calgary Wranglers have AHL Player of the Week. Your goaltender, Devin Cooley, gets the honor today. Now, I'm first to admit that I do not know anything about goaltending, but when I look at his stats from this past week, 0.64 goals against, .976 save percentage, and 2 shutouts, I'm led to believe that's pretty good.
Well, and that's what we're saying. That's the bar here. So now next week you've got to do the same thing, right? I mean, that's how we that's how we operate, right? So I mean, no, it's, you know what, he just looks really good right now, and I'm the same as you. Like I talk to goalies sometimes about posture or their mindset or this or that, right? But I don't talk goalie. I mean, we've talked about this before. That's why these goalie coaches, and there's one per 2 guys. They've got it down. And but I just loved how he's looking. He goes in there, he's confident, and you know what? It filters through the team too, because you know, we have breakdowns. We're like everybody else, and we have these breakdowns, and we're trying to get better and better defensively as we move along here. That's our challenge. And but when he's back there, man, he makes good saves look easy. And that just filters that confidence throughout the group. And we go back down the ice and away you go again, you know. So I'm really happy for him, first of all, to get the honor. He's well-deserved, absolutely. And he just looks like he's just getting better and better.
When you're obviously just getting to know Devin, he's a first-year guy with your team signed in the offseason. Like, when, without getting into the technicalities, because you and I have both said, you know, we're not, we'll leave that to Mackenzie Skapski, but what jumps out about him, whether it's his personality, whether, you know, it's maybe the way he carries himself. What's been the first thing you've sort of learned about Devin as you've gotten him into your group?
Yeah, no, you know what? I think that he's got, like, you know, a little bit of quirkiness to him, you know what I mean? And which is great. So he's got some personality, which I think was awesome, you know? And so, but the other thing is, when it's time to go and it's time to go into the game, like, he's as professional as everybody, as anybody, you know what I mean? And he's dialed in, which I think is fantastic, because, you know, he's going through, you can see him odd times, you're walking by him and he's doing something different for his pregame routine and whatever it is. But you can tell he's worked at his craft for a while. He's maturing as a goaltender, and you can see that, you know, he's dialed in on that craft and what he's doing. And he carries right onto the ice. I mean, he's like, how he's leading by example right now is just fantastic for me as a coach with my team. So
when you look back, like, obviously you had Dustin Wolf for large stretches last season. Now you have Devin Cooley, who's putting up really impressive numbers. What does it allow a group to do when you know that you've got one of the best in the league, or a guy who's just in a total groove between the pipes?
You know what? Actually, I'll tell you, like our 10-game segment. So we kind of went through some things like a week ago, and we just said to our group that I said, like, look, like, you know, you want to obviously have goals against, but this is the chances we're giving up. This is what we're giving up in home plate area. And so we're kind of throwing some analytics at our team. And so we just said, like, this has got to get better because look at our save expectancy. And I kind of led them to, like, it's like a teacher, right? You're sitting in there and you're showing them all the numbers and, like, what does this mean? And what is the conclusions you're drawing from this? And they're like, wow, we've had some pretty good goal thing. I said, you're damn right we have. So this is awesome. But this isn't sustainable, right? We have to make sure that we're helping out our goaltending, and we have to make sure that we're getting tighter as we move along. So it was kind of a challenge to the group, but I like walking through those things with them too. And so I think that's where, even though it's nice to have those guys and nice to have them playing great, now it's our turn as a team to make sure that we're helping them out too.
We are chatting with Trent Cull, head coach of the Calgary Wranglers, joins us Mondays here on Flames Talk. Trent, I want to ask you about Adam Klapka, who's back up with the Flames, scored a pair for you in the win over Henderson on Sunday afternoon. Wasn't with your group for that long, but I'm just curious. You had him last year. You are quite familiar with the game that Adam plays. Even in the short time he was down with you before getting recalled back with the Flames, I'm just curious what you noticed and maybe some areas of growth that you've seen in his game, even compared to last year?
You know, I think when you get these guys back, whether it's Coronado or Clapper, and now it's for like, you know, what is it, like 2 to 4 game stints, right? And so I think it's for those guys, it's having the, first of all, it's almost like it takes them one game now just to kind of get their legs back. What's going on? Hey, I'm playing 15 minutes or whatever plus a night. Then the next night they go out and they show why that they've been in the NHL, right? Then they're usually pretty dominant of what they do. They end up getting some goals. Like they end up playing, you know, just get, and all it is, it's just, it's almost like minutes. It's just getting them reconfirming, I think, in their minds. And you have to ask them that they're really good hockey players. And you know what I mean? That's all. So we get to go down here and like push them out on the ice, get out there, play your game, get back dialed in. And that's all it is. I think it's for me, I think it's a tune-up. I think that's all. It's just like taking your car in, get these guys back. They know they're good hockey players. Hey, make sure I'm touching these pucks. Hey, you know, I can still do this. And hopefully the same way that Maddie did, hopefully it'll be the same thing for Clapper. You know what I mean? Get himself back up, get him into some games, and hopefully he'll be better for that up there because he's touched the puck and been out here down with us.
We've seen him, you know, be quite productive offensively at the American League level. It's still young for him at the NHL level. Trent, you've coached at both levels. You know what it takes to translate one to the other league, so on and so forth. Is he a guy with his size, with his skill? Like, is that a guy that you think eventually is able to translate his offense to the NHL level?
Yeah. Yes, you know. You know what he does great? He gets to the net. He forechecks well, and he turns over pucks. And then so guys that are with him, they like playing with him, right? So, and I think that it creates more. Obviously, the demands of what they have for maybe Adam there compared to what we're putting on him here, right? We're putting him on specialty teams. He's never on the power play. He's, you know what I mean? So that may not be the case for him in Flamesland, right? But still, he is that kid who has that ability to get in there in the forecheck to help out whether he's playing third or fourth line minutes. And then all of a sudden, if he gets the opportunity to then do something with it, right? And so I think that'll come. But, like, first of all, he's got to become an everyday player in the National Hockey League. You know what I mean? So it's just the steps of getting from one league to the next. And then, you know, once he gets there, then I'm sure that those are things that he'll be able to add in.
Last guy I wanted to ask you about, and we haven't really had a chance to chat with you about him since early in the season, and that's Sam Morton. He's been pretty productive for your group and now playing his first full season of professional hockey. How has he been for you? What have your observations on Morton been through the first month or so of the season?
Yeah, you know what? I think Sam, like, he would say that too. Like, we didn't have a great chemistry there with him and his line, but I had some other chemistry with the other lines kind of around them. So the first few games, like, it just wasn't kind of working. And that wasn't for just him. It was kind of for the group. And then lo and behold, we get Clapper back there. And all of a sudden, you know, because those guys played together last year at the end of playoffs. It was Klapka, Morton, and Stromgren. And I just thought it kind of clicked for them again. So I think just those couple games starting there together, those three, I thought it kind of got re-energized Morty, got him playing the right way again. And all of a sudden, it's good to see him like score a goal, you know what I mean? Get around the net. Just those little dirty details is what we kind of refer to it as that with our team. And sometimes, If we get away from those, we're not as effective as we need to be. And I think Morey's the same way. He's one of those guys that if he's in there and he's being greasy and he's getting around the dirty areas, he's doing a great job. And that's where we're kind of getting him back to, and that's where I'm happy with his progression right now.
He has been able to, and you know, it's interesting, you know, you say that, and we talked about him jumping into your team last year right from his college career, and now he's playing American League hockey in the blink of an eye. Do you think that maybe there's a, now that it's a first full season, training camp, all that type of stuff, and maybe not the adrenaline of jumping in right from the other season, is there an adjustment period for a guy playing his first full year of professional hockey?
Oh, absolutely. And what the other thing is too, like, I think that, like, I think kind of what we all overlook, like, that's his first training camp. That's his first NHL full training camp. That's his first time playing preseason games, you know, and then to go through all that, he was at Penticton, he went to preseason, played preseason games with the Flames, and they went pretty well. Like, I thought he had a really good camp. And so then all of a sudden you have that taste of that, and then you get sent back to the Wranglers. Well, takes you a little bit, right? Like, it's a mental adjustment. Like, hey, man, I was right there, and I was just right there, and, like, now I'm back here again or whatever. Like, so, I mean, I think it takes a little bit to kind of get that all squared ahead in your mind and get back to doing what you do, which is right in front of you every day, right? And so, but, yeah, for sure, it's a complete different thing. I agree with you about him coming in hot last year, and we were, you know, we needed any help we could at that time, and he jumped right in and did a great job. So I think it's a full just feeling it all. NHL training camp, start of the season, the whole thing, and it's grinding, right? It's a grinding as the year progresses out. So I think it's all real good for him and real good experience.
Last one for you, Trent, and that's this upcoming week. You say, because you'll kick off a road trip on the weekend. You started off in San Jose, but you know, you've got some time and a full week between games, a chance to still be here and get some practices in. Just tell us what this week looks like, because you've played a lot of hockey here over the last little bit. What does this lighter week look like for you in the group?
Yeah, so we took the day today, and then tomorrow we have I call them DDs, a development day. So we have our development staff comes in, and they all come in, and they have a day set up. And so they'll take them on the ice, do different sorts of small area drills, and just kind of skilled items that we've kind of figured is good targets for our group. And it's either breaking guys down into groups and or it's position-wise, et cetera. And so that's how the day's going to look tomorrow. And they'll have a different kind of meeting and presentation of these guys. And then, so what I think is awesome. And we only have like 5 or 6 of these a year. So it's a real good, I think, different view for them. And it's a different voices too. So it's not just me talking to them. And then we have just 2 practice days. Matt Brown, our skills development mindset coach, you know what I mean? I don't know the mental performance or what exactly his title is actually, but he'll speak to the guys on Wednesday too. And so it's just a week of, and we have another practice Thursday, and then we take off and travel Friday. So it's a good week for us to kind of maybe take some time, you know, get ourselves freshened up, but we also want to make sure we're hitting the gym, have a good week of practice, make sure we're all ready to battle, because San Jose is a really much improved team from last year with a bunch of scoring power. So we're going to have to put that to the test about us and getting our chances against better.
Great stuff, Trent. We will talk to you next week while you're on the road, but appreciate the time as always. Congratulations on another good week. Congratulations on the great start to the season. Good to talk to you as always. Thanks for doing this, hey?
Thanks, Pat. And did you like my segue into San Jose on the weekend or no?
I did. I did. I made a mental note. I'm like, geez, I didn't even ask him about the. I didn't even ask him about the upcoming team. He did it for me. Well, you're learning.
And Trent, I'll talk to him about putting a little more oomph in the promo for you next week.
Next week, I'll absolutely hammer it.
That suggestion has been noted for sure.
No, the bar was set so high the last 2 weeks, so that's all. That's it. But you know what? It's what you deserve. So I'll have to see what we do this weekend to see if we deserve it or not. So that's awesome. But thank you, boys.
Good stuff, Trent. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, man.
Take care, boys. Bye-bye.
That's Trent Cull, head coach of the Calgary Wranglers, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and deliveries available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344. Always good to catch up with the head coach of the Wranglers, and they are still a bit of a wagon. 11-3, and you know what? They get it handed to them on the weekend. 8-3 they lose to Henderson in what was apparently just an absolutely putrid night for them, and they bounce back, and they look like a completely different team, and the team that you've kind of gotten to know with that 4-0 win over Henderson on Sunday afternoon. And there's something to be said about that as well. Something to be said about being Clark Bishop and Dryden Hunt, and some of those names have been important for him down there. But it's Cairns and Pelche and Morton and guys like that who have been leading the way in a lot of ways.
And you can throw, you know, the player of the week, Devin Cooley, in that mix. And while he's a little bit older, you know, similar to Pelche and similar to Cairns and similar to Sam Morton, this is another guy who we could see become a staple on the Flames roster moving forward. And so, a lot of good news stories down with the Wranglers for sure. If I can carve out 10 seconds for a shameless plug. I did have an awesome conversation with both Cooley and with Wranglers goaltending coach Mackenzie Skapski. Some really interesting stuff they're working on. You don't hear a lot about Mackenzie Skapski, but he's a guy who's really having an impact in the Flames organization. And so if you're looking to kill some time before a 6:30 puck drop, some reading that's up on the Post Media sites on the AHL Player of the Week.
Devin Cooley, who has been outstanding. You know, when you're usually above 950, you can usually say a guy's having a pretty good year.
Yeah, you'd take 950, wouldn't you?
Think so. Wranglers definitely would. Another shutout for Cooley Sunday in that 4-0 win over Henderson. That'll start to wrap us up this hour. Wes Gilbertson is on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Thanks to Cam Hughes. Thanks to Shan Hughes. Thanks to Cam Hughes. Thanks to Shan Virgie. Or, if we combine them, Shan Hughes.
That's a way to get a couple seconds back. Hey, we'll just combine the two producers
I don't really like either of them as full people. So, you know what? If I combine them, then I like them as one. No, I love them both. Shan Virgie, Cam Hughes, our producers this hour. Best in the business. And that'll wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. It's been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.